Could an app be the answer to a better garden? Absolutely. It's the new free app, Homegrown with Bonnie Plants. Note, track, and photograph your garden's progress. Personalize your weather and reminders. Get variety info, grow guides, hands-free dictation, and more. The Homegrown with Bonnie Plants app, the sharpest tool in your garden. Download it free on the App Store.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses a Seizure, as you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes, Strange Names, coming on live in studio. Post Darren Bresnitz West Coast move.
Hi everyone, I'm Darren Bresnitz.
Yeah. Joined by the ever gracious Jordana Rothman, co-host extraordinaire.
I pop in every now and then.
Yeah, it's a pop in. We're gonna try on a couple hats. Darren will be here this summer though.
Yeah.
Later on.
Speaking of hats, I'm just super uncomfortable with the headphones on.
You don't have to wear them.
I don't have a head made for radio.
There's a lot of noise going on with birds today. They've really expanded that event space back there, so it's a vibrant Sunday, if you will.
It is. It's solstice.
But before we get to that band, Andrew Romano, welcome.
Thank you very much.
I'm really excited. You've got a cold one in the hand already.
I do. Sunday's my day to just get blazo. So
really, what do you like to like? What's the first? What's the first sip? Where do you start?
Cold brew.
Cold brew. Okay.
Hardcore, yeah.
Oh, to really get the energy up and then battle it back down?
And then go back down. It's a cycle I like to
tamp it down.
Tamp it down. Yeah. Oh. Do they tamp cold brew, though?
No, but I mean, it's still coffee puns, so...
I think
we can all agree that it counts.
But it's a food show, so you would know the difference if you tamp down...
I'm representing Darren Bresnitz today, and he's
a lot
the
of puns.
Pun king,
oh, yeah.
So I well think done. I did a pretty good job, all things considered.
Yeah, don't be a drip.
Fantastic.
Angelo, it's good to see you.
Likewise.
Last time I saw you, it was on the Sussman's roof, and you were grilling ramps as the barbecue went out.
Yes.
Then you just kind of left them there. And then I left them on the grill. Yeah, you left them on the grill, and then you just left.
I also left a really rad all-clad pan that Eli swears is not at that house that I know.
I don't know. I checked those boys.
It's somewhere.
Hiding out.
There's
hiding
something.
Out.
I know it's there.
Yeah. Well, they're not there in the summer, so we can just go break in afterwards.
B&E.
Even if they were to listen to this episode now and get into their car right now, there's no way they'd beat traffic by the time we finished the show, packed up, and got there.
Certainly not on a Sunday.
Not on a Sunday.
I've driven with Max before. It's not a speedy venture.
Oh.
I actually went out to visit the Sussmans at Rush Myers.
How was it? Fun?
It was a lot of fun. We went on in the middle of the week, and Eli said that they get like 1,000 people lined up outside the restaurant on Friday and Saturday nights, which doesn't surprise me, but it seems like...
Then there's 6 on Tuesday.
quite the undertaking. Yeah. Yeah. So we were there on like a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the elephant in the room, Murray Hill.
Yes,
which Ardana wanted to get a little pre-interview role, but I'm like, why Murray Hill?
Yeah, so how did you end up in Murray Hill? Tell us about it.
It's well, I had an opportunity to get the space like 4 years ago.
Rocky Slims,
which was an old pizzeria, Mike's Pizza. We just didn't really take the space right away with the investor I was using because I was already doing. It was actually while I was doing the Pines project, and pizza wasn't anything I ever really was interested in. It's also hard as shit to make 200 pizzas in a day. It's an art form that is like, you know, you're cooking something in 8 to 1,000 degrees in 2 minutes. The variable for execution and consistency is so skewed, every single one, that it's a ballsy ass thing. I don't think it really gets enough respect. So I was really more scared shitless to take it on. As far as margins go, it's like a bagel or a donut shop, you know, the profitability is much higher than any other type of food.
I mean, it's insane. Right. It's a New York tap water.
What's the oven like over there?
There's two. There's one that we had built in Rhode Island, classic, like, you know, classic Italian-style pizza oven.
Can you shout out who built it?
I don't remember who built it, actually.
Okay. No. Everyone, usually there's always like
yeah,
a story.
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, it was a grandpa who came up from Sicily, and he was a passed down by hand. You're like, it was George.
It was like,
who knows?
He was like an old, he was an investment banker, and he cashed out and started making pizza oven type shit, probably. I'm not really sure.
That literally sounds like a PR, like, goldmine waiting to happen. Yeah.
that's the Pauly G story, right?
Then he used to make them in his backyard.
But
well,
he was more sadness, doesn't it?
Well, let's let joy be the guiding emotion here.
We just saw Inside Out, and we're a confluence of emotion here.
Yeah, Greg and I were crying in a theater full of children on Father's Day. It was delightful.
Yeah, we walked into like the 150 court street screen and be like, oh yeah, there's a lot of kids here. We got very front row. Yeah. Anyway, a guy cashed out, built you an oven.
Built an oven. We also have a deck oven in the back. So we actually do... Part of the process that I was a little scared of was that we needed to find a dough that we could bring to a proper hydration and level of, you know, buildup with the gluten to stretch to 22 inches, like classic New York style slice, and also stretch to 10 inches and cook in 400 degrees hotter. So
you don't have two different types of...
No, that's why it took so long.
That's a really interesting challenge, because you would think
we
that
created
just...
one mother dough that has the same natural leaven that we also use for sourdough minus the 0.03% yeast risen.
But there's so much adjustment on the daily, right? I mean, it's such a sensitive thing, like humidity and...
The season right now is literally creating the biggest nightmare of a situation in the
world.
What
is your ideal pizza making scenario? Like, give me a temperature, give me a weather pattern.
I mean, I had something, so I had two different ideas in my head. Ruby Rosa, hands down, for better or worse, is one of my favorite pizzas, and
yeah,
I love it.
I love
think
that
it's
pizza
just
too.
Incredibly unique and rad, and has a familiarity of like Tostino's party pizza to me.
It splits the difference between a lot of different pizza styles, yeah. making it the alpha pizza.
And it's interesting enough to where you can go and think that the pizza is obnoxiously large with two or three people and sit and have, you know, 2 to 20 bottles of wine, and it's still just as good 3 hours into them. It's just, I don't know, it was something that I was really impressed by. But then I've also been really impressed by like the old school Pizza Hut when they used to bake cast iron style.
Oh yeah.
So I had, those are like my two obsessions for almost a year, realizing that you can't put anything other than almost like, you know, commercial grade steel into a 1,000-degree oven.
Right.
Hence Detroit Pizza used like, you know, they used to use old machinery parts and like bake it in like really thick gauge steel that was meant to be fired at high temperatures. You can't buy that very easily in production. So we were putting kind of like quarter sheet trays in with aluminum and lowering the temperature of the oven above, like, you know, right to where they suggested you bring it to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really the same. The Ruby Rosa pizza is hard as shit because they sheet everything. So they almost like, from what I know, is that they dough sheet it.
Hmm.
Treat it almost like a...
like a croissant?
Yeah, like a pastry sheeter.
Wow.
To get it to that level. Other than that, I mean, there's no way to stretch it like that in that perfect circle to that...
wait,
thickness.
Is this like you know this, or is this like you're planting a rumor?
It has to be. There's no way. I haven't seen the guy do it, but I've had the pizza enough to where it's the uniform nature of the dough is just, it's exact all the
yeah.
way through. I mean, you can't, unless the person's doing it for, you know, 5 years, it's like a bread shaper. Like they're perfectly
wow.
thick. Either way, I couldn't get either one of those results. So, and I had, you know, I had my friend Aaron Tabor who came in, who was the chef at Grindhouse,
mm-hmm.
who was like, you know, it's amazing what friends do in situations where you're all in the same industry, but you still always kind of, you almost, they compensate for your lack of knowledge. And I think that's what makes you a better, you know, you can't really, you don't have the time to learn new crafts. So
mm-hmm.
he came in and started helping me, and it's, you know, one of the, between him and Pam Young, probably two of the best bakers in like this
yeah.
type of
Pam
industry
Young
right
from
now.
Samia, yeah.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Her stuff is, I mean, it's bananas. It's
yeah.
ridiculously good. The bread here is, Roberta's is phenomenal too.
Do you think that that idea of kind of being willing to develop as a chef and kind of realizing the places that you need to bring in assists, like, does that come with age, or is that something that's like an inborn
self-awareness? Unfortunately, part of the big part of the job is managing and fine-tuning.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the two key points in making really, really amazing restaurants consistent all the time. And also, in theory, you want it to always be like this, you know, and to keep it consistently awesome day in and day out like this in this type of volume at Roberta's right now must be one of the most, you know, challenging, stressful situations.
I mean, they put in that second oven back there.
Yeah. And
that was like the first summer that they're really
yeah.
turning it out in the back.
But you think about food that's really respected. It's either very personal, done by the person themselves, that's, you know, chef, owner, loves what they do and does it in repetition every day, or someone that,
two seats, like,
yeah, exactly.
Just like one or two turns, maybe.
Right.
But
maybe.
This is like, you know, Mirachi's kind of like Carlos trusting probably the 40 people here right now that are cooking food and making it really, really well. And like from the saloon, the charcuterie program here and the bread, it's just, so those are the same thing. For us, it was, I had to have somebody that I could bring in that I trusted that would make up for my lack of knowledge and
mm-hmm.
be willing to teach me. And Aaron
yeah.
was that person. So.
Let's talk about your local meat program.
Yes.
Which is wonderful and fantastic. How do you, you know, from the wide plethora of different types of meats that you, I mean, put on a menu, how did you pick something and narrow it down to something that spoke to your restaurant?
For now, the protein, the meat selection, along with the seafood is, I've realized one thing about the neighborhood. Well, I've realized a lot, but the key thing is that it's a neighborhood of very well, you know, traveled, educated, you know, it's New York. It's, you know, it has its highly opinionated locals, and it has its, you know, people that have just moved in. But the love, and I never realized how spoiled I was living and working in Brooklyn for so long until I actually opened in that neighborhood and realized, like, I put Faro on the menu for lunch in this, you know, realm of trying to replicate. I love what Dimes does. I think it's like a, you know, I think it's a LRA, like that style of food where you're not going to feel weird and lethargic the whole day, and you could have
right.
something that's clean and, you know, represents what the people that own the place want to eat. And we put these dishes on, which I, in my opinion, were slightly, not adventurous, but even a little dated. And then the food knowledge in the neighborhood hasn't really gotten there yet. So you know, we had people coming in, what's Faro, what's Soprasata, like things that to my mind were self-explanatory and kind of, you know, easy and noticeable. And it's just not, for whatever reason, that part of the city hasn't hit.
I mean, I had friends who moved there, and we would remember trying to find restaurants there, and it's like a time that food forgot.
It's a time that the value forgot too, because, you know, you can drink in that neighborhood. There's bar advertisements up and down the street that are remarkable. I mean, it's like the late 90s. And
yeah, I was walking around the neighborhood a few months ago, and saw your restaurant on the corner there, and thought, oh God, that's where this is. Like, I didn't even.
I think that every
I was like,
day,
no,
yeah.
I, actually, to be totally honest with you, I thought, oh, that's so weird. You know, there's a restaurant that shares the name with Angelo Romano's restaurant that's here, because, you know, I didn't.
Like, it couldn't possibly be that. It's, yeah, like, does he know about this place?
I had that moment, but then I did actually happen to. Have you been to Rolf's, that crazy Christmas bar?
Yeah, and I've been there, yeah.
Okay, I think that place is dope as fuck. I really like that place. I like happened across it, and I went inside, and it was, you know, summer, and there was like an old man that was waltzing, and I just thought that was such a time warp and so phenomenal, and I really loved it in there. And plus, there's a screen grab of Bowie doing in the blue suit. Give me the song. He's in the blue suit. It's a classic,
it's,
you know.
Way out of my music reference.
Wow.
Said, like, yeah. A Nellyville song. I probably
take a look at
it.
The lawman beating up the wrong guy.
Okay. Nope. Got nothing.
Anyway, so I like that bar a lot. So I'm going to come back to the neighborhood to go there and eat at Rocky
you.
Slim's.
That means a lot to me.
I mean, those prices should help you with your like Sunday goal of tying one on.
Well, the thing that's funny is during the day we've realized Saturday and Sunday, what you would relatively think is a busier daytime foot traffic day, is where people really just kind of want to get out of that neighborhood right now.
Yeah.
Because there isn't really anything to do other than, I mean, look, if you want to watch a pay-per-view event, you go to Murray
Hill.
That's
the spot.
Yeah, that's the spot. You want to watch like the UFC fight in that super crowded bar in Midtown, crush it in Murray Hill. But
so do you adapt to the neighborhood? What do?
You adapt without dumbing it down, and I adapt without having to feel like I have to go home and vent to my wife for 3 hours and talk about how you adapt slowly.
We're going to pause for a second with the musical break and then come back. We're going to talk about adaption. We'll continue on the thread. Square Pizza.
Yeah.
So let's go back to, or the, continue on the thought of adjustment, of kind of, you know, educating a neighborhood that on how to eat your food. What are some of the things that you
Oh my goodness.
Such a fucked up
Can I just like pipe up for
it's
the
like
people
I'm serving
here?
The Matrix food or something.
First off, it's not, it, but it'd be like, yes, it is for that, but it'd be for any type of like new cuisine to open up in any area. It's
He's
not
serving
like,
pizza.
Exactly.
Is it, okay, so if you're just serving pizza, what's the problem?
Oh, wow. That's the business model question, I guess. Yeah. The funny, you know, we bought the Polino sign. That's what's on the side of the restaurant.
Okay. Oh, is that? Oh, okay.
Our pizza
yeah.
sign. So, I mean, the question is that there is no question. You know, you have the thing where people come in and get... It's a kind of a... Very similar to when we started, when I was here. It takes a little bit of... It's a learning curve. It's, in my opinion, it's not so much the style of food. It's the way that the food is, I think, seasoned and presented. And mm-hmm.
The frame is important.
Yeah, and yeah. You're trusting the person and the restaurant's palate and, like, kind of what you're going to get, especially in that situation. The pizza is as familiar as anything, but...
Mm-hmm. So, like, when somebody comes in and doesn't know what farro is or soppressata, like,
right.
How do you... I mean, you know, you have a few responsibilities as a chef or as a restaurant, right? Like you have the responsibility to be true to who you are as a creative person and write a menu that you feel passionate about. And you have a responsibility to also give the people what they want so that you can have a successful business. And yep. Somewhere in the middle, you know, is I think where most successful restaurants live, right?
Exactly,
so
yeah.
How do you... do what you need to do as a creative person and not be sort of pedantic about or didactic perhaps about, you know, because you know you want them to go on that journey with you, right? And you need to earn their trust to do
you
that
do.
So
I mean Tuesday at 2 p.m. in Murray Hill,
right,
somebody comes along for the journey with me, it's like they're your role dog, like that's
right.
that's a solid ass commitment.
Right.
I got really good advice a couple of years ago from this guy Alan Phillips. He owns all the, you know, the Pick a Bagels.
Yeah.
He owns all those. He used to own Cooper's Coffee. You know, and he gave me great advice. He said, you know what? Do what you do really well and then reap the benefits at home and be creative as you want. And, like, mm-hmm. You know, you can draw that line of creativity to a certain extent, but when it's a detriment to your lifestyle and you're creating a future for yourself, you're really not being creative anymore. You're just being, like, a stubborn asshole. That's really all you're doing because you're refusing to do something that you know you can do well
mm-hmm.
to provide for yourself and your family. And you don't ever want to dumb it down, and that would be something that would kind of, you know, in theory, break my heart. You have to make it I'm looking at it this way. I'm making it interesting for myself without making it too challenging for everybody else.
Yeah, you know, what you're talking about is making me think of actually what a really good sommelier does in a way. Because, you know, when a restaurant opens, and especially if they're opening like a midtown or uptown or something, they open and they open with oftentimes like a list that's really familiar to their big spenders, right? And over time they earn the trust of their guests, and then they start kind of sneaking in the
weird
kooky
shit.
stuff, and you know, and they have a relationship with a guest, and they come in and they're like, well, if you really like this, you know, fucking big juicy cab sauv, like you'll like this, and they start kind of, you know, leading them astray, as it were, into, you know, new territory, and that's how really interesting wine lists get made. Well, and I always think that's really like an interesting part of the role of a sommelier. And so it's a cool thing to be able to do in that neighborhood. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a really interesting and noble challenge to go into a neighborhood that's like that, that is a little bit of a dining desert, and say, you know, I'm going to give the people what they want, but I'm going to like bring some other stuff to the table, so that, because it's, you know, it's the old JFK adage, right, about like the rising tide
and
all ships.
And I think I agree with you, like when it works,
right,
people were going to be so loyal to that, because it'll be like in such a neighborhood that like it is not I mean, opening up another pizza place in Brooklyn, no disrespect, it's like the path like well followed.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing any type of food in Murray Hill, like I'm excited, like, and you don't have to be calm about it.
Angelo Ramos, like he's like the Robert Frost over here.
But my family and I and Jordan too, we spent a lot of time in Murray Hill earlier this year when I was sick, and like there was not much up there to eat. And I know that even the doctors up there kind of had like weird places to eat to be able to send them or families to like a good meal out there. Like I do think it does take on like a significance and does make a difference.
And it's the environment too. You know, I love Roberta's because of the environment, and I love the establishment. And if you're going to list your favorite pizzas, it's not going to be my top pizza, but it's going to be my overall best experience close to my house and what I like to do and hang out in. And I do the wine list at the restaurant now, like I did at the Pines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all natural, biodynamic, and it's the same thing. You know, it's all really great stuff from, you know, Zev's a really close friend of mine. So it's a lot of stuff from Zev and from Jenny and Francois, and like, you know, it has all the hits on it. And it's a list right now that, you know, all my friends that own, you know, like Four Horsemen guys and, you know,
shout out to Four Horsemen.
Yeah. That was there last night. Shout out to Randy Moon.
Yeah.
The place is awesome.
Yeah. It's cool. And to your point, Greg, you know, when something like that is growing and you're nurturing it in the neighborhood, and it's become sort of like a bulwark of a neighborhood, there's a real sense of ownership that comes along with that experience of having a wonderful place in the neighborhood like that. And you see it here at Roberta's. It's like all of these people, you know, this is their place. They've been coming here since before Bushwick was what it is now. And so they've supported it all along and will continue to. And that's how you get that kind of like organic growth and emotional ownership.
And I think it's owning what you do. And that's one thing that I took away from the experience here with Carlo is, you know, try selling sea urchin here 5 years ago. It was weird. It was really weird for us to put that.
I remember when I had bone marrow here when this place opened, like right when we started doing the radio show, and there was bone marrow on this menu. And I was like, okay, this is great. Weird, but great.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, you sell one, and sometimes when we were doing, you know, when Bain was doing the pies and thighs fried chicken here for a long time, you know, we'd sell 16 margarita pizzas and 40 chickens, and that was lunch. And now it's, you know, they're selling frika and like cool forms of spelt and rye berries, and then moving into even, you know, cooler stuff and mad eye and great sashimi. It just builds and it builds and it builds, but sticking with it, it's too easy to fold. And I think that's the thing. So you can pull back so quick in an obvious way to where, even with the wine list, we pulled back a little bit, and we noticed that the people are so used to just having things that are cheap and familiar without having anybody be like, I really like this, and that's why we're selling it.
Right.
We're not just selling it because everybody else is force feeding it.
So I want to get one last question before we let you get back to your day drinking.
Yes.
But if I were to come in, or not if I were to come in, if someone like a local Murray Hiller were to come in, what meal would you construct for them that would both be like educational and familiar that's currently on the menu?
I mean, right now, if you look at the menu, I have a very large past history of working in like Italian style New York restaurants, and a lot of the dishes are representations of things from like Lupa and dishes at Del Posto when I was doing the catering, and just kind of stuff from here. And I would just go through, I mean, a lot of the dishes are very vegetable heavy, so I would run through all the vegetable dishes and a lot of the house charcuterie, like the Iberico Lardo and the Mangalista stuff that we do, and kind of like the Copa de Testas and the pastas, and run through it. And I would leave out the pizza until the very end and kind of give them a smaller portion of that.
I mean, tantric tasting menu.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a set format too, like regimented, but it would be
tantric tasting.
Come at it with the pizza at the end.
At the end,
you know,
yeah.
Really wow them.
Dessert then pizza. Why not? Right? Surprise.
Well, thanks for joining us.
No worries, dude. Thank you for having me,
dude. Always. Tell people where they can find you, find the restaurant, social media, etc.
Corner of 25th Street and 3rd Avenue, 338 3rd Avenue, Murray Hill, New York. What?
Pop on the 456.
That's it.
Yeah.
There's like wires dangling in the pizza pies.
Is this a good tempo?
Is this how you guys roll every day?
This is how we roll every day.
Wow. It's amazing you guys aren't fat.
Everywhere is somewhere, baby, so can't you see? Nowhere just means knowing nothing of where you've been or where you're going feels farther. You're a sight to see this early morning, getting lost in my own neighborhood. The same freedom you feel is what's been blowing in my cells since I arrived.
Oh my god, that's so good. I'm glad you guys like that. Strange Things, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Hi.
Hello.
What's up? Nice to see you.
Yeah, good to see you guys. How are you doing on this? Like, I feel like this is our first real hot Sunday of the summer.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. We love the hot weather. We all hate the cold, even though we're originally from Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe that's why you're not from Minnesota. Maybe that's why you're from there and now here.
Right. We love everything about Minnesota except that part. It's a little frustrating.
Is there anything you miss about, like, the Minnesota summer?
Minnesota's the best place to be in the summer. Honestly, it's so gorgeous. There's green everywhere. I mean, there's green in New York City. You occasionally see green, the rare bit of green, but Minnesota is everywhere.
You don't have
so
to
beautiful.
Seek it out at all.
Yeah.
Parks and lakes every two blocks.
Yeah. I like your guys' origin story from University of Minnesota surrounding bassists and drummers. Can you guys mind sharing that?
Do you mean our...
How you guys formed?
Well, it started off with Liam and I had been playing with other bands, and when we got together, we sort of got a few musicians that we had been playing with, really not thinking that they were the best thing for the project, but, you know, they were guys we knew and liked. But
Was it Slim Pickings in Minnesota, or was it just...
At that point, it was, because we weren't really part of any sort of clique. We were just kind of making our own way, so... We kind of went with what we knew and got some guys that we liked. But eventually, as the music progressed and as our live set sound progressed, we realized we need to get some musicians that were more equipped to handle that kind of stuff. So that's where Fletcher came in. He actually approached us at one show and was like, your set was good. Just call me when you need an upgrade.
I mean, it's such like a good thing. I mean, but I also feel like finding a good bassist and a good drummer is like probably like not to say they're interchangeable. And of course, you're staying in the band. At least you guys, for now. Okay, for now. But like, you're just like, okay, like, let me know when you guys are ready.
Yeah.
It was him.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The guy holding the bass, I apologize. And then since the three of you guys kind of formed together, like, then the things kind of take off from there?
Yeah, I suppose so. We've kind of been experiencing, like, we didn't have, like, an overnight, like, blow-up or something like that.
I just want to make sure that nothing on Snacky Tunes is, like, an overnight success. It's, like, long fraught with, like, setbacks and hardships, but, like, you know, it's, like, a long road of tried-and-true trepidation.
But luckily for us, we haven't had too many, like, major setbacks. It's just been, like, a slow and steady climb, which is kind of the way we prefer to work, you know, I guess.
So what made you leave the sweet, sweet, bitter, cold winters of Minnesota to bring you out to New York?
Gentrification, really. We just love it. We're big fans. Opportunity. It's opportunity. I know New Yorkers will love to hear me say that there's opportunity out here, but that's why we came.
What are some of the opportunities that you see here that you might not have found in your hometown?
Increased network. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's music producers, DJs, radio hosts. There's the works in Minneapolis. There's just a lot more of them out here.
Who were some of the first people that you found when you came out here that you started to go like, yeah, like we made the right decision?
Well, we came out here after getting signed to French Kiss, thinking that we'd like to move out and be a little closer to the label as we our record comes along. We actually became very good friends with a lot of people at the label. It was sort of a built-in network when we arrived, and through them we met other people. Lou, what do you think, Liam? You haven't said anything yet. This is Liam, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Liam.
Hi.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you. Well, I'm originally from New York, and I grew up in Brooklyn, and I had some friends from my high school days that were still in bands, and we would occasionally come from Minneapolis when we were still living there permanently and, like, set up little bills here and there with some pals that I had before, but... I don't know. It's been cool. Like, almost everyone bartends, so I feel like a lot of people that we know and have met have been at bars.
Yeah, it's, I feel like
behind the bar.
My first 5 years were local. I mean, you too, Jordana. You have a lot of bartending friends.
I have a lot of bartending friends. Yeah.
It makes it especially makes it easier when you're like don't have a lot of money. Yeah.
Oh yeah. For
yeah.
Sure.
Well, why don't we hear a song? What are you guys gonna play first?
We're going to play a song called Ricochet.
All right, here we go, live on Snacky Tunes.
Ah.
get all messed up. I will catch in a daydream without closing my eyes. Ooh, yeah. New sound temptation, can't look away. You're my fixation, not on me today. Taking it my way, alright. Yeah.
Sounds great. That was a good move. That was a professional move. That chord definitely fell out, and you got it right back, like, not a second too soon.
Did I hear a burrata lyric?
Piranha.
Oh,
it should be burrata. We are in a pizza place.
I was really hoping it was about burrata. I got really excited. Did you see me look at you? And I was like, yeah, I love that cheese.
People can never understand that lyric.
Yeah.
Someone thought that it was flight to Rwanda.
Oh, yeah. Publicist.
I guess it kind of like classic social message. You are in life, Piranha or Barada.
Yeah,
who doesn't want a vacation there?
Wherever you are in your life. Let's talk about the new record. What was the decision to re-record it once you moved here?
It was just not... I mean, we're all kind of perfectionists. It just wasn't quite up to par with what we had envisioned. We wanted something just... I don't know, we just knew that we needed a rebirth, totally. So we knew we were coming here, we knew we had increased resources because we had recorded it before we had been signed or anything, so we came here with extra help, and we knew that we could achieve more with that, and use different instruments, a better facility. Not the facility that we recorded in Minneapolis was bad, it was just not fulfilling what we had envisioned.
And so did you get signed on the old record or the re-recording?
The old record.
Okay.
And they had also encouraged us to re-record it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, it was mostly our decision, but they were like into it.
Oh, was that like? I mean, if you guys wanted to, you don't have to, but if you wanted to, you absolutely. Yeah, that's a good. And what are some of the? And I know you said instrumentation, but I know you had producers involved. You know, did they help you kind of explore like a deeper or going back a complete second time? Like, what did you maybe learn about the song meetings or the structure of the songs, or what kind of like understanding did you gain from doing it a second time?
Well, we were mostly doing it ourselves the first time, so it was a really nice opportunity to have an objective point of view in the room in the creative process with us the entire time. And we worked with this guy Andrew Mari, who is so great, and it was pretty much just ESP. We didn't really even have to communicate notes to each other. We just gave each other, like, we just grilled each other until the ideas just sprouted. Glares.
What were some of the questions that he asked you to kind of get to know you guys?
Just, like, exchanging, like, YouTube clips. I feel like when we were just kind of courting each other, it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, like, I like this, and I like this.
Do you remember, like, which one you guys sent or he sent that was, like that unlocked the whole, broke everything open?
There was a video of Chairlift doing one of their songs that
in Japanese.
Yeah, she learned her songs one of her songs in Japanese and did a video.
Yeah, and then this a couple of B-52 songs.
And then you're like, yes,
yeah,
you shall like produce us.
The joy, we can just see the joy, envision it.
And you know, was the process? I mean, birthing something, I think, is such an intimate thing. Having already, you know, kind of laid the framework, did you feel that it was maybe easier the second time, or was it more difficult because you thought there was more riding on it?
I think it was a lot easier just because it was comfy. I mean, this room had couches. This room had, it was just like a lot, it was a lot more accommodating.
It was just broken chairs on the first one, just like glass everywhere.
Yeah, we just sat on sticks. No, this was, it was great. And, at times it felt, I guess, monotonous because we were just revisiting material that we had already committed ourselves to for so long, because a lot of these songs were written 3 years ago and some of them were written 5 minutes ago, so it was I guess just a roller coaster of excitement.
Okay.
Ups and downs.
And I know you guys just came back from a week tour with Azealia Banks. How was that?
Awesome. It was crazy.
Where did you guys go?
We went to Chicago and Boston, and then we played Irving Plaza with her here. And actually a lot of downtime. It was mostly just us hanging out. Everyone on the crew decided that we all needed a vacation after two shows, which is kind of amazing. So we all just drove overnight from Chicago to Niagara Falls and spent like 3 days in Niagara Falls.
That's amazing. Was that first time at Niagara Falls?
Yeah.
Did you cross over to the Canadian side or just...
I did.
Yeah, you did?
I don't have a valid ID save for my passport, so I thought that that was the one situation in which that would like be an advantage.
Yeah, but you just like walked over.
Yeah,
no one even checked you.
Yeah, I just walked over.
That's
crazy.
Oh, so that's how you get in back and forth.
So that's how you go.
Back, like
get
pounds of weed.
Yeah. Or did you? Yeah, who knows?
Isn't that side of the falls like there's like lots of like crime and like it's just like total craziness?
It's like that's like the wrong side of the falls.
Isn't the wrong side of the falls.
Oh, we said the wrong side of the falls. You don't want to.
Gotta stay in America.
Yeah. Why don't we hear another song?
Cool.
What are you guys gonna play?
A ballad we like to call "Where and Why."
Out of line, ooh, out of sorts, out of time, ooh, ooh, ooh. Private eye, oh, do you know where and why? Garden wall, I'm waiting in the second stall. I wanna see the boy alone. I wanna see the boy alone. history that you can roll on the fence and in the window cyclone. You look like that, your lens like the rest, but you look like that, your lens like the rest.
Fantastic. Giordani looks speechless. For the first time that I've ever known you, he looks speechless.
Yep, yep. I was actually looking for a cheese joke in there as well.
Did you say Romesco in that? I think you did. I'm pretty sure. I don't want to say I misheard it. So what does Brooklyn Summer have in store for you guys?
We're going back to our hometown of Minneapolis. And
can't miss a summer.
Huh?
Because you can't miss the summer.
Yeah, we can't miss the summer there. No, it's going to be really fun. It's the first time we'll have played there in a year. We're just excited to see everyone and kind of do that. So we'll be there for a week, and we're playing a couple shows there, kind of homecoming, faux record release-y kind of things. And,
it doesn't have to be faux. It's like just appropriate. Just a little bit after.
We're the Fab Faux, though, you know.
Oh,
just kidding.
No, pretty good. Pretty good. You want to write Punch Up for us for the radio show?
Definitely love a good pun in here.
Yeah.
Francis used to write fortune cookies for
extra
income, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Can we get a couple of those?
Do you remember any?
They were all really bad.
Well, I mean,
wait, did you do this for sport or was it just
was
it sport. Was it your job?
Extra income.
Yeah, I entered a pun competition. You had to put forth 10 different jokes, and you know they choose a winner. And I really thought one of mine would take it, but no pun intended.
Oh, wow.
Classic.
I mean, you had us like, oh, it's a good story. Oh no, just a long setup. Wait, so do you remember any of your fortune cookies at all?
One was, they were all really, it was like we worked at a really high end restaurant, and I would write these cookies for them. They still passed out fortune cookies. I don't know. They're really high end. But
what was the restaurant?
It was called like World Street Kitchen. Well, it was like fast casual, but the food was like brain food, if that makes any sense. It wasn't brains.
Yeah, no, we got, yeah.
But one of them was like, ask about our pizza special. So I'd have people coming up to me with their fortunes like, what's the pizza special? I'd be like, there's no pizza, you idiot. And oh, I got it. So these were mostly just, I would write the fortune cookies to as setups for myself, for my own jokes.
After they paid, then you could just start fucking with the customers.
He was his own hype man, basically.
So you lasted how long?
long time. I was there for 18 years.
18 years of my life.
I want to make sure we get one more song in, but where can people get the record? Where can people find you? And any summer Brooklyn shows here?
We're going to announce a bunch of dates soon, which we're not at liberty to discuss yet.
Is that Paul's doing?
A little bit.
By the way, Paul said you guys were sexy and charming, and he was right.
Oh, yeah.
Sid, on the other hand, had nothing nice to say.
they're just dear men.
Yeah, they're good men.
We're going to announce some stuff soon, and till then, you can buy our record on all the main outlets, iTunes, et cetera. You can stream it. And then they sell it at Rough Trade in New York. They sell it at Rough Trade and Other Music and all those really cool record stores and stuff.
Okay,
strange
cool.
Names. Use your time wise.
I want to thank Angelo Romano for coming by and making us definitely go to Murray Hill this summer. We'll go, right?
Oh, we're going to go together.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go after something.
Yeah.
Other fun stuff.
Or nothing. We'll just do nothing and then go. or that could be the thing that we do.
A thing in and of itself.
Shout out to my special co-host, Jordana Rothman, and all the feelings that we saw today at Inside Out. And a big shout out to Berlin Summer, which I'll be heading to next weekend. And to Darren and Anna, who are listening in for their 1 week of happy nestinghood. And
you're
Joe.
As dear to us as a cheese plate.
Yeah. And then we'll be off the next couple weeks, and then Darren will be back. So how anticlimactic is that one?
Well, yeah. It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, well, no, then you'll be back. It'll be a light, snacky tune summer. That's okay.
Okay.
We have some things to sort out. Anyway, Strange Things, thanks for playing here today. What's the last song?
Last song's called I Can't Control Myself.
Wanting some security, but you've been giving all your money to charity. Oh, you're so good. People think that you're so good. Someone ought to tell you that you're enemies are watching you. Once in a while, you make the wrong impression. Once in a while, you break it my heart. And I've been walking miles to tag along with your shadow. So don't keep stalling. I'm just gonna keep on calling for you. Don't run away. Just stay a while. I'm gonna need your help. I can't control myself. A doubt in my knees. This is the new survival. But I got up under my feet. Cause I can't control myself. You should think about your future. Cause messing up, yeah, is so hard to redeem. And you should maybe be my teacher. Oh, cause otherwise I ain't joining that team. No. Once in a while, you make the wrong impression. Yeah, once in a while, you break in my heart. And I've been walking miles to tag along with your shadow. So don't keep stalling. I'm just gonna keep on falling for you. And down to my knees. This is the new survival. But I got up under my feet. Cause
listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.